morning is United States v. Smith. Mr. Duesberger.
Thank you. My name is Roger Duesberger. I represent Appellant Roderick Smith in this appeal, and I'll address the single issue in our briefs. May it please the Court. The issue is whether the District Court erred in denying Appellant's motion to vacate its sentence of 37 months under the then-mandatory guidelines and to impose in its place a fallback sentence entered of 24 months under that was entered under this Court's decision in United States v. Booker. In July 2000...
Counsel, you might want to begin by addressing the question whether the District Court had subject matter jurisdiction in this case. Your brief doesn't address that. The United States has addressed it and says that it thinks that what you really filed was a motion to correct a clerical error. But I must say I have a good deal of trouble with that conception. You don't seem to be asking the District Court to correct an error, but to make a concrete decision in light of Booker.
Right, Your Honor.
That raises the question whether a district judge has authority to reserve the right to reduce a sentence if in the future some contingency should be satisfied.
That's right.
It does seem to me there's serious statutory doubt that a district judge can reserve a right to reduce a sentence if in the future
with or without Booker
could be satisfied.
We addressed that in our reply brief, Your Honor. The point we made was that we felt that the district court entered a sentence that was conditional upon the occurrence of a subsequent event.
Well, the question is whether the judge has any authority whatsoever to do that. I mean, take a clear example. The judge says 60 months in prison, but if your client is well behaved, I'll reduce it to 36. Right, that's a screamingly illegal sentence. You can't come back and say, I now want you to decide my client has been well-behaved, reduce it to 36. And it wouldn't get to be something the district court could do by putting only 60 months in the judgment and leaving the 36 months off the books, as it were. That wouldn't be a clerical error. That would just be a means of avoiding the rule that the judge can't retain any control over the sentence.
Well,
I don't want to claim any special provenance from having been on the Booker panel that suggested this procedure. But what we had in mind, to the extent it matters, is the judge would enter this dual sentence and the defendant would appeal. And then after the Supreme Court decided Booker, we would either affirm the sentence or vacate it. There was no suggestion that judge would enter this, the defendant would not appeal, and then 6 months later, you would try to get a second look at something because the statutes appear to just forbid the district court from giving second looks unless on remand from the appeal.
Well, at that time, it was unclear whether and when the Supreme Court would take the issue.
Well, it was unclear, but I have to say I have very much the same concern, and I will say that many, many people did, in fact, appeal the way many
yes.
people did appeal, the way Judge Easterbrook is describing. It is, in my experience, looking at those appeals, it has been much more common that the district judge would say, for example, the guideline sentence is 37 months, and in the exercise of my discretion, if there were no guidelines, I would also pick 37 months. That happened frequently. It wasn't so often. The judge would say, but if there were no guidelines, it would be 24 or anything to that effect. I mean, I have a lot of sympathy for the position you're in, but there were a lot of things going on because, if I'm not mistaken, at the original proceeding, there was an appeal waiver, was there not, in Mr. Smith's plea agreement?
No, we did not waive our right to appeal.
There was no appeal waiver?
No.
So you could have then filed protective appeal saying,
but as the district
court, 37 months is wrong.
But as the district court itself said at the end of that sentencing, he questioned whether there was any reason to appeal that sentence. And given the fact that the that this court had suggested the entry of a fallback sentence, and it appeared to...
But the suggestion that a fallback sentence be entered doesn't say anything about how the defendant preserves his rights under the fallback sentence. All right? There are both statutes and rules which say the district court cannot revisit a sentence more than 7 days after it's been entered, period, and can't do it. Right? And they rather imply that the way the defendant then protects his rights is to file a notice of appeal. I don't see how one gets around the statute saying that the district judge just can't revisit a sentence more than 7 days after its entry.
Well, as we say in our reply brief, we do agree with the government's contention that we could come back, you know, to correct the sentence based on the subsequent condition occurring.
But then what do you do about my question? Can the district court say 60 months, but if you're well-behaved in jail, 36 months, come back to me in 24 months, and I'll tell you whether I'm reducing the sentence?
I think that's...
I mean, that would be so screamingly illegal that, I mean, I assume you agree with that.
Well,
that's the same kind of conditional... I'll change my sentence if a condition is satisfied in the future that seems to be what you want to enforce.
The case that we cited, you know, for the conditional sentence was, or the conditional event was, the Pfeiffer case, which was a case in which the court entered a sentence a decision conditioned on a subsequent event, and the law or the Seventh Circuit on that subject said that the conditional sentence would be treated as final if there was no return to the court based on the occurrence of the subsequent condition. And it seemed to us that same theory applied in this case, that here the court entered, pursuant to this court's recommendation, a conditional sentence.
But it's just it's a legal condition. I mean, Judge Easterbrook's hypothetical gives you a factual condition, but I've never seen a sentence that said your sentence is 37 months unless the Supreme Court rules that, you know, the Fourth Amendment can be violated by knock and announce, in which case there's, you know, count one disappears, and, you know, in other words, you know, a lower sentence as opposed to something.
Yeah.
And that, again, I mean, you could certainly take an appeal and protect your position while the Supreme Court's considering something. But it's tough to see. I mean, what your position and the government's reminds me of, frankly, is baseball arbitration. You know, you enter a judgment that says the sentence is either A or B, and then once the Supreme Court decides, you quote-unquote correct under Rule 36, and you throw out the one that it isn't, and so you don't have a new proceeding, but you do choose between A and B, which is kind of baseball arbitration. But I've never seen that in criminal sentencing.
Well, this was an unusual situation, certainly.
Well, the whole country was confused. We're not criticizing you personally or Judge Holderman or anyone else. It was a difficult...
It was, and it's hard to remember exactly what the various thoughts were at the time. But it was kind of a disrupted situation, and under the circumstances, it appeared that the judge had entered a sentence that was within the mandatory guideline range, at the low end of the range, recognizing the defendant's personal history and characteristics, but felt that he could not go below that and couldn't under the then mandatory guidelines, and then entered at the same time this fallback sentence pursuant to the court's suggestion.
Okay.
So, time's up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Newsberger.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Stuart Fullerton for the United States. Your Honor, there's no question that the best way for Mr. Smith to have preserved this issue would have been to take an appeal from the original sentence in November of 2004. He didn't do that.
And in fact, the judgment itself just says 37 mm-hmm. months.
Then
there's this other thing, the minute order out there, but the judgment says 37 months.
That's correct. The written judgment says 37 months. There was an alternative sentence pronounced at
that time. And that sentence was, by the defendant's perspective, a bad sentence because it supposed that the guidelines were binding.
The 37 months
right.
sentence, that's
and so
correct.
It was subject to appeal based on the Booker theory.
Correct.
It wasn't appealed.
Correct. Now, so if we go forward then to February of 2005 and Mr. Smith's attempt to secure for himself that lower sentence, the 24-month sentence, the question is, did he have any possible vehicle to get his claim before the district court to try to get the lower sentence that was announced back in November? And, of course, it's not a 2255. It's not a Rule 35. It's not on a remand from the Court of Appeals. The only possible
anything.
Way that we could think of the district court having jurisdiction.
It's,
and
it's
makes
not your job to possibly think of ways no. the district court can get around statutes.
We understand.
To enforce the statutes.
I understand that, Your Honor. But looking at what Mr. Smith was...
What would you say about my colleague's, Judge Wood's, use of the exclusionary rule? We have held that a violation of the knock-and-announce rule can lead to damages, but not exclusion of evidence. That question is before the Supreme Court. I think a district court can enter a sentence that says, well, 60 months on the assumption that the Seventh Circuit is right. 36 months if the Supreme Court disagrees with the Seventh Circuit, and if it disagrees with the Seventh Circuit next year, you come back and tell me and I'll reduce your sentence. Think a district court judge could do that?
I don't think so, Judge.
Good.
But if he did that...
How was this
that was the right answer.
If he passed that test, no way.
But if he did that, okay, and then it came out beneficial to the defendant later, could the defendant go back to the district court and seek to obtain...
That's the question before us. You tell us yes or no.
I'm sorry?
What's your position? Yes or no? They can come back or can't?
We think that he could have the district court hear the motion under Rule 36.
But let me add one more.
But hear that Judge Holderman properly denied it.
Well, we understand that that's your position.
But answer to my hypothetical.
Yeah, I think we do have to change that answer. But let me throw in one more factor here, which is the fact that our Booker decision, the beginning of July of 2004, laid out a recommendation over Judge Easterbrook's dissent, laid out a recommendation that there be these backup sentences. And perhaps that wasn't pellucidly clear about how that was all supposed to work, and I certainly have no reason to doubt the good faith of Judge Holderman in trying to understand what procedure he was being told to follow. Suppose somehow both this court and Judge Holderman were responsible for the fact that Mr. Smith didn't know what to do. Would that change anything? Or is it really just his tough luck if we've sent him down the garden path?
Well, I have two responses to that question. First, I think it is sort of tough luck. And second, the bottom line here is that Mr. Smith got, I mean, Judge Holderman made very clear that what the 37-month sentence that Mr. Smith got was not only a sentence generated by an application of mandatory guidelines, but also was, as he made clear in February of 2005 or March of 2005.
Well,
that's not what we're pursuing. But was there any? Did Judge Holderman suggest on the record that this alternative sentence, you know, this bifurcated sentence, was one that the defendant did not need to appeal in order to preserve his rights?
I don't believe that's in there.
And, you know, the Supreme Court has announced what it calls the exceptional circumstances doctrine, that if the district court on the record assures you that doing X is not necessary, then you're protected. That would be the question.
I don't believe that.
Say you don't need to appeal.
I don't believe that took place in November of 2004.
We certainly did not say in our Booker opinion that a defendant would not need to appeal in order to protect his rights.
That's correct.
In fact, to the contrary, what Judge Holderman said was, so you do have a right to appeal the determination that I have made here with regard to the guideline sentence, and then he went on to say, I don't know why you would want to appeal it, but if you do, you have to file your notice of appeal within 10 days of today's date. So that's really not the same thing as saying you don't have to appeal.
I think that's correct. So, at any rate here, Judge...
But, you know, I'm not so sure. I mean, if we were to slide over all of this stuff, I'm not at all sure that what Judge Holderman articulated at that very early time post-Booker is what he would say today. No one was really sure how strong the advisory power of the guidelines was, what the 3553A factors had. There have been thousands of cases since that day in this circuit alone, it seems. And I think it's not clear to me that he would have felt so constrained by the guidelines if you were to ask him today. But of course, we would not get to that if this whole procedure couldn't happen.
I think there are clues to what I think he did say. He went some way down that road in the March hearing when he, after Booker had come out and we were before the district court again, when Judge Holderman did address the issue of indeterminate sentencing versus advisory guideline sentencing and came out the same way.
But he keeps talking about, you know, I don't like this, you know, you have all these other factors about your personal circumstances, but uniformity is what the guidelines cause. It sounds like he has a very heavy thumb on the scale of the guidelines and doesn't realize that his discretion extends to looking at all the 3553A factors, that the 5H prohibitions aren't there as firm prohibitions. Maybe they're discouragements at this point. I don't know. But, again, if there's a flaw at the outset, we wouldn't get to this. But
right.
He shows real ambivalence in my mind.
That could be. Of course, if there's a jurisdictional problem here, we don't get to that. And even in our view, we don't get to that because the condition for the position or operation of this alternative judgment, that is the correction of the original J&C under the Rule 36, wasn't fulfilled by the Booker decision. So we don't get to that either. So in our view, Mr. Smith is left with the 37-month sentence, and the judgment of the district court should be affirmed.
Okay.
Well, unless there's any other questions, we just ask that this court affirm the district court.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Anything further, Mr. Duesberger?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the predicament that the defendant in this case was in is that, at the conclusion of his sentencing, he was sentenced appropriately under the existing scheme of the mandatory guidelines. And as Judge Holderman commented, there seemed to be nothing to appeal. Now, we could have filed a notice.
Except for the fact that we had already held the mandatory guidelines to be unconstitutional. So an appeal is just a slam dunk in this circuit.
Well, an appeal could have been filed, but...
on your view, and on the view of the panel in Booker, an appeal could have been filed and would have resulted with certainty in a 24-month sentence, assuming the Supreme Court did not disturb our ruling. And it's hard to see how that would discourage the defendant from exercising his right to appeal, as opposed to egging him on to appeal.
Well, by exercising his right to appeal, then he would be sitting waiting for some Supreme Court decision that may or may not come. Now, it presumably would have come, when that would have happened. In the meantime, a briefing schedule would have been set. We would have.
When was the sentence in this case imposed?
November of 2004.
Oh, the Supreme Court already had Booker under advisement by then. It's not a question of when would the Supreme Court decision come. Certiorari was granted in Booker less than 3 weeks after we handed it down. The case was argued in October of 2004, and of course decided in January. So this man was sentenced 2 months after Booker had been argued in the Supreme Court.
Well, it was not as clear then as it may seem today.
Isn't that true?
Yes. Very true.
Hard to predict the future because it hasn't happened yet. But.
No, that's right.
It's always hard to make predictions, especially about the future.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
The case is taken under advisement, and we thank you for your willingness to accept the appointment and the assistance
Thanks.
You've been both to your client and the court. Thank you. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.